Hi, I'm Daisy.
Hi, I'm David.
And we're the MSA Crusaders. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of MSA Crusaders. Today we're speaking with John McDonald, and he is coming to us from New Zealand. Hi, John, and welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Daisy. I'm good today. Summer's day here.
It looks warm in the video.
It does. It's making me feel warmer. We're tired of this winter over here. Been a harsh one. So, John, can you tell us something about yourself?
66 years old, diagnosed with MSA officially last year, but previously diagnosed as Parkinson's. But I'm retired, compulsory retirement, I suppose you'd say. I spent a lot of time working in business as a serial entrepreneur, I suppose you'd say. And but later, after a dose of cancer, I decided to do things for the good of other people, and I joined the Queenstown Lakes District Council, and I also chaired a group trying to restructure mental health and addictions
So
in
you
the
said
southern
you
region.
battled cancer?
I had urethral cancer.
I have never heard of that before. Heard lots of
That's
cancers, but not that one.
It's very rare. I probably owe my life to a group of doctors in the United States who, when the doctors here couldn't figure out what it was, they said to do something and cross your legs, everybody. Urethral brushings.
When was it you battled the cancer?
It was, oh, it's 10 years ago now. That's my third brush with cancer. I've had two melanomas before that.
Wow.
Well, you say you had a rare cancer, now you have a rare disorder. You are just one for rare cards, aren't you?
John and I are going to donate our bodies to research after we're done with this life.
Well, I too, like you, fought cancer and then just to be landed with the MSA. So
It's a cruel blow, isn't
you just keep on fighting, fighting, fighting. Tell us more about yourself. What did you do for your work?
So I've done many things over the years. I started as a farmer, and then I got involved in skiing tourism at a whitewater rafting company in Queenstown.
Well, that sounds like
Got
fun.
involved in tourism marketing for Queenstown and publishing tourism publications and developing tourism software. I've done all sorts of things. And then I bought a garage, and my midlife crisis when I was 50, I bought my dream rally car to go.
What was that? What type of car was that?
Mazda RX-7, a classic one.
What year?
81.
81.
So
I owned
it's.
an 87.
Oh, good. Yeah, love the cars, love the rotaries.
Yes, it was a nice car. John, what caused you to go to the doctor? What kind of problems were you having?
Yeah, just urinary urgency and erectile dysfunction were my original triggers to go to the doctor.
And were you diagnosed with something else before MSA?
Parkinsonism, should we say.
So is
Yeah.
it MSAP that you have?
Yes, it is.
He's Eastern, technically Eastern Hemisphere, New Zealand, right? And he's has MSAP, which is rare because normally over there they had MSAC, so even more rare.
Well, in a small country like this, there's only 5 million odd people. I'm told there's only about 20 MSA.
That is really low. Wow.
So it feels very isolated from my point of view. It's nice to connect with you guys.
So, how many? There's not many doctors then. I'm thinking that are a part of knowledge when it comes to MSA, right? Over there.
Almost no one. It's
How were you able to look out and find a doctor that was knowledgeable about MSA?
there's a university here in Christchurch, and the professor at the university is my neurologist. He's a movement audiologist. disorder specialist, and people know about it, but it's so rare.
Yeah.
And the other day I had a reason to go to the emergency department in the hospital, and nobody I talked to knew what we were talking about.
Don't you hate that?
God, it annoys me.
It's like we have to instruct our physicians on what our disorder is, that nobody has a clue. And it's like we repeat ourselves over and over and over again. It's like, where is sharp when we go to the doctor or the emergency room and says, I have MSA. It is the blah, 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 blah. That's what we need to do to inform everyone.
And people, I find the medical profession are very good at not listening.
Exactly. Or they have subs. They have what is it?
You know, John, you're absolutely right. Every visit I go to my PCP, who is my main primary care physician, my main doctor, not specialist, just my family doctor. Every visit I go there, he comes in that door. He's like, we start talking about the issues or my disease. And he's like, what's the name of that disease you have again? But it's like every time I got to say multiple system atrophy.
Wear that shirt.
Yeah, it's a real issue. But it wears you down though. I recently had a colostomy operation, and I've been reading up about general anesthetics and the risks involved. And I told everybody that I thought we had a problem, and everybody said, no, no, you'll be fine, you'll be fine. Well, we weren't fine. You know, I don't know exactly what happened, but I know it took a huge toll on me.
You're talking about the anesthesia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you declined since you've been on it or on anesthesia?
Massively.
What happened? What's the difference before and after?
So before, I was walking 4 or 5 blocks a day with a stick. When I came out of the hospital, I could walk 50 meters with a walking frame.
Wow.
And that goes many of the other symptoms, like saliva in the mouth, drooling, swallowing. My stomach motility is no better than it was before.
Has your doctor mentioned Botox?
Not yet, no.
That's what I have, those problems with drooling too, and the Botox does help that.
My wife would say just to take my mouth shut, that would fix everything, but it'd be a lot cheaper too. Yeah, you know, John, your symptoms, your onset of symptoms, and even what they progress into, we're almost identical. I find that absolutely, you're probably the second person that we talked to that is almost identical. And that's, these things progress so fast because we, you know, especially as men, we dismiss everything. You know, oh, it's a sore leg. You know, I peed myself once, or I had an accident here, or I'm tripping. You know, as men, we just dismiss these things because we're just men. You know, I keep going forward. But it's amazing how when it starts to hit something personal, you know, like I ignored everything in my bladder. I ignored everything in ED, all the sexual stuff, everything until my feet said, hey, I'm not walking. And then I was like, oh, let me go to a doctor, you know? So it's amazing how, even though we're different ages, you know, I'm 44, but our symptoms, the MSA comes in, usually hits you the same way for a lot of people, but it could also be completely different. And I find it fascinating. John, do you have like any slurring in your speech? Have you noticed any change in your vision or speech or anything like that?
My speech has changed massively. I had what people called a good radio voice.
Yeah.
It was a strong voice.
I told you. I said Sean Connery from the beginning. I told you.
Yeah. It's funny you should say that. I keep getting told I look like Sean Connery.
Pretty close. Pretty close.
Can you describe specific strategies that or techniques that you've used to manage your symptoms?
It's because they're changing so rapidly, I find it really hard, particularly post that last operation. to have a strategy. I was very much into going to the gym prior to the operation, and that was a big part of my strategy, was to keep exercising. But when you come out of hospital and you basically can hardly walk, you can't exercise. I'm finding that one of my biggest challenges at the moment.
Yeah.
I find it very difficult. I want to walk, but if I walk, I'm using a walker, but if I walk, yesterday I did a kilometer, which is 1,000 meters, and that's me for the day. That's, I'm done, done and dusted.
Yeah.
That's all I can do.
Get tired real easy.
Yeah. And energy low is hard to deal with, and especially in the heat of summer, I've lost all heat control.
Yeah.
Overheat real fast. And
you turn purple or bluish, like on your extremities of your body, your hands and feet?
I haven't noticed that so much, as I just feel really crap. Really, I don't feel like I'm heating up, and then all of a sudden I'm hot.
Mm-hmm. And it makes you real nauseous. Is that how you can tell it? Yeah, that's what happens with me. Are you in physical therapy or speech therapy or any kind of therapy?
I see speech therapists and physical therapists, but really people are just giving, like, I feel like most people give up. You know, you've got a terminal illness, you're on a progression downhill, and that's the way I feel a lot of people treat me.
Yeah, it's hard to find one that you can really mesh with, isn't it? I fortunately got one that I do. My physical therapist is really great. He says he's getting me better to, not to get better, but to maintenance, to maintain where I am. So
that's what, you know, a lot of these people talk about it, quality of life, but what is quality of life?
If you get that answer.
What about pain? Have you had to deal with, you're in a lot of pain?
I've got aching legs and really bad blood pressure drops. I've got swelling in my legs now. And sore feet, really sore feet, cramping.
I was gonna say, definitely the cramping.
Yeah.
Do you ever have neuropathy or just the cramping in your knees and your feet?
Neuropathy as well now.
That's another thing that's hard to deal with, isn't it?
Really hard. My legs. I describe them at times as feeling like lead weights.
Yeah, that's exactly true. You know, they give me, doctors give me medicine for my neuropathy in my legs, and everything is like, does it work? No. Like, let's max it out. Like, take even, does it work? No. It's like, I don't know what the pain is for MSA versus normal neuropathy or nerve damage or, you know, breaking a vertebrae, which causes neuropathy, things like, I don't know the difference in neuropathies, but the medicine for me does not work for the MSA pain at all.
No, I'm having a problem finding something that works too.
Yeah, like Vicodin and Tylenol, codeine, stuff like that works, but the actual, I should restate that the actual medicine, for nerve pain itself does not work at all.
No, it does not. What about you, John? Have you found anything that works?
Nothing that works.
And you mentioned that you did a little bit of speech therapy. Did you have a swallow test?
Yeah, I did the swallowing x-ray test, and they fed me all this different stuff. And it seems to, it's got worse and worse. Like, I'm now, well, eating's becoming an issue, multiple reasons. Loss of appetite, difficulty swallowing, difficulty cutting up food because of my hands.
Yeah. You know,
We're heading in the wrong direction.
You live alone?
Yes.
So I can't even, Daisy and I, you know, with all due respect, we can't imagine, like myself, like there's things I stay away from, like crunchy food, because I'm going to choke to death on it. But thank goodness that my wife and kids are here to cut steak and prepare food and blenders and this and that, because I could do it, but I'm pretty sure I would have stabbed myself 5,000 times. When I'm like, I don't know how you do it by yourself. That's awesome, and it's also terrifying at the same time.
Exactly.
It is quite terrifying for me going forward, looking forward, because my biggest dread is being institutionalized.
Yeah.
They're just not what I want. And I've got a daughter here. You know, she's my only close relative, really, that is in the town. I can't lean everything on a 25-year-old. She's got a life to live.
True. Unfortunately, that is true.
So you don't have a caregiver that comes and helps you out?
Yeah, well, I do now, because I got blacked out a couple of times in the shower and in the bathroom in the middle of the night, and with low blood pressure. And so now I have people come in the morning, help me get up and get dressed, and I have to have my SBC catheter and stoma bag changed in the mornings as well, showered, breakfast, that's done for me every morning.
I'm going to tell you something that you may have heard, and most people in the MSA hear all the time from their doctors. I didn't understand the extent that you were being debilitated from, you know, you mentioned your catheter and bags and stuff. Just looking at you right now in the video, you look really well. I mean, you look healthy, strong. I mean, your face is, you know, you look like you exercise. And without seeing the rest or knowing the rest, yeah, that's what doctors say, especially people with MSA, like they told me and us with Daisy, like, you look too good to have MSA. And it's like, yeah, but what about all these other 20 symptoms I got going on?
Wow.
But yeah. You know, you could easily fool some people, and it's sad that that stuff happens. They, you know, one neurologist just doesn't know what to do or what to say, and you got to go across the country to find help, you know?
Well, we get into the real nitty-gritty of it. You know, I just hate the fact that people will continually tell me how great I look.
Yeah.
Like, and just try, I sometimes I just want to hit them.
<It's> like, yeah.
You know, I've got tubes hanging in and out of my guts, and I've got, you know, everything I have to go through.
See, so I'm you have a morning, super catheter?
Yeah.
So you did.
Yeah, she does too. Two, some. You both got, why do you say that? Super pubic?
Yeah, super
pubic catheter. Yeah, that's a tongue twister for me.
And you live alone. I just can't imagine having a super pubic catheter, having all these issues and living alone. Man.
I have people, the same company that comes in the morning 7 days a week, come in the evenings 7 days a week.
Oh, okay.
To get me undressed and get me into bed, because I can't get myself into bed and plumb up all that plumbing that you need for overnight.
You sleep on your back.
Yeah, and at least I'm not having to get up in the middle of the night and risk those falls,
mm-hmm.
which we don't want.
Yeah, I just destroyed my bathroom fixture yesterday. I blacked out and fell. it's coming, man. It's like I can see the writing on the wall, but you know, I bet you walk into doctors all the time and they're like, yeah, you look really good. And they dismiss what you're saying because you simply look very well.
I finally found a GP. It's taken a long time, who understands and gets it.
Mm-hmm.
and is prepared to go out and lobby on my behalf to make sure that other people get it as well, which is fantastic.
How long have you had this suprapubic catheter?
About, maybe now, I got it late October.
Oh, so not very long.
And then 6 weeks later, I got the colostomy.
Not very long ago then, huh?
No, still getting used to them. A huge, you know, the effect of the loss of your privacy and your dignity and your, you know, people just don't get it. They, like you say, they look at me, David, and say, oh, you're fitting well. Yeah. And they see you walking with a walking frame, they slowly get it.
Yeah, like your, I'm going to minimize this, and I don't mean that, but like from the chest up, I'd say waist up, but your bowels are higher. But you know, from your chest up, you look fabulously normal, you know. And then like it's like, which one of us with MSA are we going to lose our bottom half of our body first, or are we going to lose the top half? You know, mine has been a lot of the head, but also, but more the upper. Whereas yours is seeing Daisy's like more the lower part, the bottom part of the body that goes first. And it's stressful.
Thank God. My whole body.
Yeah, now.
I don't think I'll be walking much longer. My legs just get weaker and weaker and weaker. I've got an electric wheelchair here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really waiting.
And you said these symptoms have been going on since basically, if I had to write, 2016, 17-ish, something like that.
Yeah,
almost over about eight, give or take 7-8 years. That's a long time, MSA.
That's a long time to be dealing with it alone.
Yeah.
How does that affect your mental health, John?
Yeah, well, as someone who spent a lot of time working in mental health area, like it's challenging, to say the least, but I try to keep myself busy. With a stress, I know is bad for me, but I try to avoid it. But I've never been very good at avoiding that.
You have someone that you can talk to?
Yeah, I've got several people, but I've got a really good psychologist I deal with quite a lot, because you have to, you know, like. For me, end of life is a discussion which we don't have. And as a society, certainly in this country, no one talks about it. And I find now I want to talk about it, and a lot of people don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I've even, like in New Zealand, they recently passed assisted dying legislation.
Wow.
So I went down that route. But the doctors all think I'm too healthy.
Yeah, you know, we had a guy here in the United States that was, of course, when he was doing assisted suicide, it was illegal a couple of decades ago. Jack Kevorkian, if I'm saying that right. And, you know, I thought he was evil. Satan himself, the devil, Hitler, put a name, I thought that's who he was, right? And it's like now, you know, I'm looking at assisted suicide, it's like, what a compassionate thing that I mean, for legitimate reasons, right? But what a compassionate, I mean, we do assisted suicides for dogs and cats.
Yeah.
When they can't stop crapping themselves, like what about humans that actually have brains and stuff, you know?
We wouldn't treat our animals the way we treat people.
Right.
I'm not saying I'm ready to go, but I'm saying I want to have that tool in my toolkit.
Yes, there will be a time.
There will be a time. And I initially said I didn't want any tubes. I've now got two tubes in me now. Next one would be a feeding tube, and next one would be a tracheotomy.
Really?
I don't want either of those.
Me either.
No. I won't have those two. I will have the two you guys have, but or you know that you have, John. I will not have. Believe you me, I will not have a breathing tube, and I will not have a feeding tube. That will, you know, my father did the same thing. I'm pretty sure he took his life from medicine, but you got to, unfortunately, you got to know when your time is and how much you can take. You know, that's like, I don't want to be a burden to my family.
That's the burden is what I feel like I've become already.
No, that I don't want to live like that. That's not something.
Yeah, well,
I want to stand there.
Yeah, we're all a burden to our family, right? We're a burden to the medical establishment. We're a burden to the doctors and the nurses and the people that come over and out. Like, we are a burden, but we're a due, justified burden.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where, you know, where we get so sad and depressed that, you know, there's one thing to have a medical condition, and there's another thing to have your mind gone to where you hate yourself, you hate everything about your life every day, you hate talking to people, you hate waking up, you hate breathing. That's like, at that point, it's like, okay, what else can we do? Because it's
there's
not gonna
a line.
Be there's... Yeah.
No, I've been a very social person, and I have lots of friends and enjoy lots of social activity. And you know, the thought of being unable to communicate is my worst nightmare, really.
You're doing well for 8 years. I mean, you sound way better than Daisy.
Yeah, I have a lot of respect for you. I really do.
Thank you.
We had institutional pathology.
Sean, do you have any others? Points of any other resources you use? Like, obviously the medical, you spoke about the individuals that come over and help you in the morning eating. Do you have, like, I mean, you spoke about your daughter, religious, other extended family, friends, co-workers, anything like that? Or is it just simply people that come in?
I've got friends who really enormously helpful. A couple in particular watched someone with motor neuron disease.
Mm-hmm.
They're really helpful. Like, they know so much. Like, this closest thing I can think of to what we got to go through.
I don't think I mentioned that in my YouTube videos or anything, podcast, but the first thing my movement disorder specialist said on her notes wasn't Parkinson, wasn't MSA, it was MND, it was motor neuron disease. And I didn't know what that was, but it's like a whole system of diseases like MSA and Parkinson's.
Yeah, it's the closest thing in the effect, the way it works. Your body shuts down and you remain active in your brain.
Yeah.
Like, my brain isn't, I'm not as good as I was, but I'm still, people say to me, I'm still reasonably with it.
Does your insurance cover for those people to come stay with you? Or is that something that the country provides?
No, the country provides it. One thing I should say, in New Zealand, the retirement age is 65, and it's not compulsory, but at 65, we're eligible for a pension.
Mm-hmm.
So I receive a pension from the government, which would do a little more than cover your basic costs.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've been reasonably successful in my life, and I've got an apartment in the central city where I can live. I chose it because it had lift access, and I intend to stay here as long as I possibly can. Eventually, I will have to probably pay someone to sleep and or stay over.
Yeah.
But I think that's a small price compared to being institutionalized.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I think the quality of care would be better with what you're doing than being committed, you know?
Yeah.
I've got great, great carers that come in now, great people.
Have you ever pursued any types of clinical trials or experimental research or anything like that?
I pursued a couple, but I haven't managed. There's nothing in New Zealand. Closest is Sydney, Australia. And they just closed off a trial recently, and I applied one day too late.
Oh.
Now you talk about in life we talk about regrets. That is one, just like one of the clinical trials that I didn't reply to an email. I didn't follow up with them. Like, hey, what? And then they said, oh, sorry, they closed yesterday. I was like, you know, I've had regrets in my life, but not getting into a clinical trial with the MSA because I didn't send an email or act one day sooner. That hurts. That absolutely hurts.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that.
Have you tried like any U.S. ones? Because like U.S. and stuff, they'll most of them will pay. Of course, I don't know about airfare from New Zealand, but usually they pay for almost, if not everything, for clinical trials, like especially in the U.S. Have you tried over here?
Yeah, I haven't, fair to say. I didn't think I qualified. I didn't think.
It depends. There's a lot of them where you got to be under 5 years under of diagnosis. So there's some that you have to be under so many years of being diagnosed, and then there's some of them that you have to be under so many years of actual the onset of symptoms.
Yeah.
But if you, we'll send you the website, but clinicaltrials.gov.
Yeah.
For us, it'll have all the inclusion and exclusion criteria for you all right there. And actually, our website, the government clinicaltrials.gov, lists every clinical trial across the world. And it's completely accurate. So I'm not saying anything about New Zealand or Australia, Japan, China, but it shows everybody's
country.
Yeah.
Good,
so it could be helpful.
Yeah, have it up.
I've been denied at all of them. Say I'm too progressed.
Yeah, that's where we're getting to now, probably.
Okay, can you walk 20 meters without unassisted if you had to, Sean?
I had to.
You had to, yeah, so that's a problem, but that's one of the big cutoffs is not necessarily the years and onset or whatever. It's can you walk, for us it's like 25 to 40 feet unassisted back and forth, but if you can do that, then there's a lot of trials that will
accept you. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
I can't do that, so that's what hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you balance.
They're like a pinball machine.
even walking with my walker, I think people would think I'm drunk.
Yes, they do. I walked into today to the Strax grocery store without my cane, and I swear, like I went to the mall.
How many sales did you knock over?
So, oh no! See, I don't. I'm pretty good, but not going left or right, except at home. Like if I'm turning and going that way, like walking forward and looking left, yeah, I'll fall. I'll fall into shelves. But we went to the mall and we got some Chinese food and stuff yesterday, I think it was. And I got 100 feet into the store, into the mall. I was like, I got to get my cane. Like I can't keep going, but. You know, the days I choose not to use my cane because, you know, I got this, I'm strong, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, no, you don't. Go back and get it.
I don't know about you, but I find if I stand still, if I get cornered by somebody who wants to talk, just standing.
It hurts.
Well, it's impossible.
Like the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
I like that when I'm sitting down, too. See me over there?
I have to find something to lean against.
Yeah, I know when I'm standing talking to my wife, or even back when I was working last year, I just stand, like you said, standing, I'll be like wobbling back and forth, like I'm ready to tip over. It's like I just, you got to hold on to somebody.
Yeah.
Like we wobble.
John, what do you do for extracurricular activities? I mean, obviously we can't go running marathons, you know, we can't go scuba diving. Maybe actually swimming is a lot easier than swimming is actually really doable with MSA. But what do you do for fun? What do you do? I mean, I know there's only so much you can do that we can do, but what passions do you still pursue while having multiple systematically? It could be chess, it could be video calls.
Videos, but I really don't have any. I need to say I've lost them all pretty much. I've always been passionate about driving. Love cars, old cars. I've got a beautiful, two beautiful cars, and I haven't driven since my November operation. And that really hurts because the ability to get out and be in a car.
Well, now, for John, I would assume that if he loves cars and collector, he probably also loves fixing cars.
I can't do that either.
Right. But that was something you did before, right? I can imagine you had to.
When I rallied my RX-7, I did all the mechanical work myself pretty much. Mm-hmm. That was probably, if I think back, that's probably one of the earliest signs, was I couldn't get up. And I was, if I was crouching down to change a wheel or something, I'd stand up and have a dizzy.
It's just not one thing we lose, it's like the whole thing. You know, I can still drive halfway decent, but I also got a car, an SUV, that keeps me in between the lanes, so it's not really fair to say, you know. But when I'm not using it, when me and my daughter went to Mayo Clinic late last year, I was swerving. So I was just waiting for a state trooper to pull up behind me and pull me over for drunk driving. But I find driving very easy to do still because I'm sitting down. I'm not jerking. I'm not spasming. I'm not tremoring. I'm holding on to something. My feet are on the floor.
But how do you look back when you back up?
Yeah, well, I have eight cameras on the SUV.
You see?
Yeah, you see, it's all around cameras. So I really don't have to. And I could tell you when I go to look for traffic, like moving my neck or moving my eyes. I'll like move my eyes mostly and don't really move my neck because it's so stiff from the muscles. But yeah, if it wasn't for that car, that SUV I have, I wouldn't be driving. Like, I would never go drive my wife's car or my kid's car because it doesn't have those features. But just because it does, I'm still able to, you know, get from point A to point B.
I'm like you. I could drive, but I don't really feel like I'm always in full control of where I am.
I would feel
the spatial awareness.
Spatial perception. Yeah, distance.
Three or four rows of cars, you know, traveling in multiple lanes.
Yeah, I'd be in fear of hurting someone.
Yeah, hard to figure out where everyone is and what they're doing.
You actually say that the spatial awareness is that the frontal cortex is when that front part of your brain stops communicating, is the spatial neuropsychologists will say that. And it's, yeah, I get stressed from driving at times. I get overwhelmed.
Anxiety. I would have anxiety and I'd be in fear of hurting someone else.
And fatigue.
Yeah, fatigue, absolutely.
It can hit me like a brick, you know, just you're driving along, you're halfway home, and all of a sudden it's like, God, I can't do this.
Last year or the year before, I had my company vehicle, and I'd be driving 15 minutes from work to home, and like halfway, I would get these like chest palpitations, like your heart rate's racing or skipping a beat, but instantly fatigued. To my wife, because like I'm not necessarily going to pass out from blacking out or anything, but the body just shuts down and says we're done, and I got to pull over, and we'll hopefully wait for this thing to pass and then start driving back home again. But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Have you had Phil? He has to have toothpicks to hold your eyes open.
I'd never experienced that in my life really until just recently, and I was halfway home, and it's like I shouldn't be driving.
It's unfair, but if I didn't have my vehicle, I can't even hit anything. I try to hit my kids from time to time in the driveway, like, hey, stand behind the field. Let's test it out. I can't hit nothing. Can't hit trash cans, can't hit no kids, can't hit pedestrians, can't hit cars. Like, I think, like, it's very fortunate to have a car. You know, it's funny because I bought this SUV the same month my symptoms started. And of all the vehicles I could have bought, I bought one that wanted to, besides the Tesla, I bought one of the safest vehicles on the road. And 3 years later, it's, you know, paying dividends today where it, you know, it compliments me if I try to drive.
It's your MSA assistant.
Yeah, it's my MSA.
Quite the opposite. And I, when you
bought the classic car,
Audi RS4, 4 years ago. And it's sports seats and everything. You can't get in and out of it.
Those bucket seats.
Once I'm in the bucket, I'm fine. But
get in, get out.
Yeah, my son has a Subaru sports car. Anyway, I have a lot of trouble getting in and out of that one. Yeah. So low to the ground.
Yeah.
My wife and I got into a Dodge Viper before, the V10 Dodge Viper. And those seats are like what you do, like bucket racing seats. And once you get into those seats, you're not getting out without someone like pulling you out.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So where do we go from here, John? I mean, what's your future plans? I mean, this is kind of a wide open question, but any plans for traveling or another hobby?
I want to tell my story is one thing I want to do. I'm not quite sure how that's going to be done. But my daughter's right into blogging and vlog, you know, videoing. Yeah. And, so we might be doing it that way. I formed a trust 4 years ago in Queenstown to try and build a community hub for the social sector, for the not-for-profit people. And I stepped down from the chair of that last year after we finally secured a multi-million-dollar piece of land for it.
That's so awesome.
I'm still trustee of that and want to make that come reality. That's one of my things.
I hear you want to tell your story. Have you thought about writing a book?
Yeah, I have. We have to speak a book. I've lived a very interesting life and done all sorts of things like we said before. And I think of, you learn at the end of the day that people and experiences are a lot more valuable than money. And
I agree.
I think you should definitely continue the vlogging, the video blogging. When I got my diagnosis with MSA, I started my own YouTube channel. And I get people from New Zealand, Australia, all over, you name a country, that send me messages and I talk to as much as possible. We talk on the phone and video chat. Not only is it, I would assume, inspiring for some people, right? But it's also, people can compare what they have and what I have, how my system started, how theirs started. But it's also, for myself, it's a really good release, stress release. I enjoy it. I'm good with electronics and videos and editing. I'm getting better every day. But, you know, there's something, I mean, writing books is also phenomenal, like Daisy does. But I think for me, like me, I'm not a book person. I'm not a bookworm. I can just go through books. But, you know, I never found anyone on YouTube or on the internet that showed their video progression, they would say through video. And that's what I do with my videos, topics and education, but also myself and how I progress from A to Z. I'll tell you, John, it's very worthwhile. It makes you feel better. But putting a video in the comments that people send you, you know, a parent saying, man, if their husband or kids were still alive with MSA, they would have loved your videos, or people with MSA just thanking you for having something on there to talk about and to look at. It's fulfilling. It's very fulfilling, at least to do the video part for sure.
You can pick.
Yeah, one finger at a time. Like you don't even have to edit videos. You can just go live and stream it, and it is what it is, right? My first video was 45 minutes of just me talking and rambling on, but you don't have to edit it. It could be something much more simpler.
Yeah, Hannah, my daughter, she says we should film my bedtime routine.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I film my legs and stuff, and people love just seeing what actually MSA looks like.
Yeah. That's very good advice.
Yeah, I have two books that I've written about MSA, my experience. But
it's very hard to find out anything, I've found. And, you know, meeting people like yourselves and connecting with the MSA Coalition and the British equivalent. And, you know, I've just been reaching out. And
there's really two main resources. You got the MSA Coalition, and you also have the MSA Alliance. Have you ever heard of the MSA Alliance and the New Zealand chapter that they have?
No.
Bill sent him a link the other night.
Well, it's not. It's defeatmsa.org.
Talked to them the other day. Talked to Raymond.
Bill Fortier sent him a link.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of information on there, research and groups. I mean, I think they got 6 or 7 or 8 different countries that are on, you know, a consortium that they get together and help each other with charities and research and stuff like that.
Or there's the MSA United as well.
Mm-hmm. But definitely take a look at it. There's multiple. I'm a part of MSA Alliance. I'm also a part of MSA Coalition. I'm not going to lie to nobody. Right? They're not competing really factions, but they both are going for the same goal, and they both offer. But, you know, MSA Alliance is more international. MSA Coalition is more United States. But they both do many things differently very well.
The big question we all have is, what's the progression going to be?
Yeah.
You know.
What do you think?
I feel like mine's getting faster.
I agree.
It's looking at anything from 6 months to 2 years, maybe more.
Yeah, I've said for the longest time I wouldn't be walking 6 months from now, and that was probably 2 years ago I said that. But, you know, it's funny you say the progression, because it's really impossible to see the progression of how we're going to move forward. You know, a lot of my other symptoms, like right now, my urinary, well, you know, let the record state, you know, I had a couple of accidents yesterday, right? Just when I think it's gone away, it comes back. But, you know, my symptoms have their peaks and valleys. They got their highs and lows. And, you know, I thought I was only going to have to worry about walking. Maybe my bladder and stuff, and now here comes my swallowing, my speech, and as of recently, I saw my neurological ophthalmologist, my eye doctor for neurology Friday, and not only do I have double vision, but I have different types of double vision in each eye, which I did not know that was even possible. She says we could fix one, but we're going to make the other ones worse.
Prisms?
Yeah, well, prisms, if you have one type, you can fix it that way. So now I'm less worried about my walking and my bowel movements than I'm worried about my double, triple, and quadruple vision that I have with my eyes. The last thing I thought was going to happen was my eyes are going to go in some type of way, right? So it's so hard.
And like that.
Yeah, mine are actually side to side, yeah. So they have these devices they use up and down, left, right, and they can see which version you have. But my double vision is left and right. I still got really great vision. I got contacts, but I see very clearly with corrected vision. But the double vision definitely doesn't help things in life. But as John says, you know, we got to worry about our progression. I mean, I'm worried about this over here, but yet these symptoms and new symptoms coming up are completely different. You know, it's kind of hard to predict this crazy disease.
Are you guys having any issues with like swallowing water?
Yes.
Swallowing, period. Yeah. It's a chore. With people with MSA and even Parkinson's, much more farther down the road, you know, our swallowing There's a little flap right here that has spasms.
Esophagitis.
Yes, esophagitis. There's a couple more. That's the term for that. But when that thing has, it's working. You think you're choking. You think you're dying and not breathing. But it's actually spasming. It's like a Charlie horse.
Yes. Cramp.
It's in place. That thing. It doesn't matter if it's water, milk, pop, food, anything. Yeah. Pills, pills for me are the worst, but people that have in Parkinson's, they'll start swallowing things down their trachea for breathing, resulting in pneumonia, which will end up killing them at some point. You know?
Applesauce with your pills.
No, I tried everything. But then I crush everything up now that I can, but the capsules, like, I can't. You never cut capsules. They're going to cut through and eat your throat alive. But yeah, I crush everything I can now. I choke on almost every single thing.
Do not use a straw, John.
Do not use a straw.
No straws. Just your Mountain Dew. Can.
No straws. Last food service says it's the worst thing for you.
Why is that?
Because you pull it down faster and that esophagitis can't close in time.
Okay. Okay.
John, anything else you'd like to share with everybody?
No, at this stage, I don't think.
Not yet.
It's just as a horrible, bloody disease. And I suppose there's one thing. It affects everybody in your family.
Yes.
Like, I've noticed that. And my daughter says to me the other day, you know, that you're not the only one that's grieving. And they live with it every day and see all the little changes.
Yeah.
That makes it really tough.
It does.
If you weren't a strong person, you would take offense to that comment. But that comment is the truth. And being able to think more than ourselves with our current condition is everything.
Well, it's I find I'm inclined to not think about them as much as I probably should.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm wrestling with what I'm dealing with, but they're wrestling with watching you wrestle with what the little things you could do yesterday that you can't do today.
Yeah. Well, what was it that your father said that saying of his? No one said it was going to be easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's
smart man. Yeah. Amen. That's a smart man. Smart man. I mean, that's same thing I tell my friends and family. Like, it could always be worse. I could have something horrendously worse, or I could be dead today, and yet I'm still here.
I mean,
when Daisy was saying before about having cancer and stuff, like cancer as a potential curable.
See, I think you're stronger. I'm not saying you think you're not strong, but you have to be stronger than you even imagine, and that you have to be stronger than even our listeners even would think, because you have fought cancer 3 times and beat the crap out of it, right? I mean, Right. I mean, me going through my father's 14 years of his illness conditioned me to how strong I am today. So, you know, it's those experiences that makes us stronger. And unfortunately, our day will come with MSA, but your family and your daughter, being young, will be able to look back and say, you know, from her experiences with you, and she will be even stronger herself. Because of what she went, for the bad stuff she went through and the good stuff, you know, it's tragic, but, you know, our family definitely learns a lot from us and becomes more and more stronger just by being a part of our journey. Yeah.
It's interesting you say that, because some of my good friends have said, you know, they can't believe how strong I am. I don't see it that way as much as, you have to deal with what you're given, don't you? We all.
Yep.
None of us would choose this route.
No, if there's one thing that I've learned about this, is that you don't take for granted things. and tell people not to take for granted, you know, things that they can do on a daily basis, because tomorrow, who knows what you're faced with.
It's very true, Daisy, and it's probably a parting shot for me is that, you know, the live life while you can would be my advice, particularly to those fit and healthy people who are sitting on the couch doing nothing when they could be out doing something.
Yeah, I'll talk to my daughters like that. So, John, you have any idea, any wild guess of how MSA started with you? Like, mine happened 2 days after I fell and hit my head in my bathtub. Now, there's no medical connection of any studies between smoking, alcohol, drugs, or traumatic brain injury. But I find it fascinating that only 2 days after I hit my head, I went to the hospital, I blacked out, went to the ER, that here comes MSA. I don't, again, there's no known connection, but you have any thoughts about how yours may have started?
And so I've got two. When I thought it was Parkinson's, I certainly, when I was farming, I used a lot of Paraquat.
That's the same, yes.
Could be chemically related, so environmental factors. And if I was to go for another environmental factor, I'd say the colossal amount of antibiotics and stuff I've had. I ended up having 11 hospital admissions and 10 GAs in the space of 5 years.
Wow.
I'd say I had a fractured skull. You know, so David and I, he hit his head and I had TBI. But they say there's no connection, so I still don't know.
Yeah, they don't know. Now, one thing that's is more than a coincidence, like if you take the state of California in the United States of America and look at the density of people with Parkinson's, which is similar to MSA, it's similar. You look at the how many patients, where they live, in the relation to farmland, farms.
Yeah.
It's almost completely encapsulated in those farmland areas. So, you know, they've been rooting out pesticides for a long time because there is connections. That, you know, there's certain connections. Everybody gets sued over here for pesticides, but it seems definitely that pesticides and farming and sprays and chemicals like that have definitely. I mean, I've had gasoline in my eyes. I've never swallowed pesticides, so I don't know. But, you know, there's a time of day when I was a kid where you went to the grocery store, you bought your groceries, your asparagus and strawberries and stuff, and you always wash them off because there were still pesticides on your fruit and vegetables, right? It's not like that today, but
they've been so exposed.
Yeah, right. Everybody has. So definitely the pesticide, you know, the crop dusting and stuff like that is definitely one of those things that is very, very promising, unfortunately.
My stepmom's husband was a farmer. He crop dusted and things like that. And now he's been in the nursing home with Parkinson's for about 4 years.
Yeah.
I think there's quite strong correlations there.
And his name is John McDonald.
It's ironical.
Is that McDonald with an A?
McDonald.
No, it's spelled differently.
It's the MC. Well, Mr. Sean Connery, I mean, Mr. John McDonald, we appreciate you being on with us.
I'd love to have you back on our show.
Well, I'd love to come back. Really good to connect. Great to see you. And keep up the good work.
How many episodes of us have you happened to hear?
Sorry?
Have you happened to hear any of our episodes before you were on it?
Yeah, I listened to about 4 of them the other day.
Now, in your opinion, John,
how are we doing?
Who's the better podcaster, Daisy or myself?
Well, that's a tough one.
I'm just kidding.
It's a team thing, right, John?
I'm trying to get a raise here, John. You're not helping this, okay? I'm trying to get more money from this free podcast. Okay. But, you know, anybody's listening, I do take donations for gift cards for McDonald's Happy Meals and Lunchables. So,
Lunchables.
you with MSA, you take what you can get, right? Hey, my mom will send me gift cards for McDonald's all the time for like birthday or gift random cards she sends in the mail. It's the best thing ever.
Those are supposed to come in handy, don't they?
Yeah, they have to go. Well, you got a lot more before the inflation hit, so yeah. All right.
Well, talk to you again then, maybe.
Thank you for coming on and chatting with us. It's been an honor to have you on the show. And we love having someone with this awesome accent as you.
Yeah. Yes, thank you.
All right, we'll set a date up, John.
Okay. That'd be great. Okay.
Have a good afternoon in your country.
Yeah, we'll do that in the sunshine.
John, okay. You have a good one, John.
Cheers. It was great.